desire y'all's prayers this morning. I enjoyed that song. It actually goes in line with some of the thoughts I have today. How many of y'all remember when God asked Elijah, "What are you doing here? What doest thou here?" That's in 1 Kings chapter 19. 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 13. I want to read that verse real quick. "And it was so, when Elijah heard it, that he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entering of the cave. And behold, there came a small voice unto him and said, 'What doest thou here, Elijah?'" Now, a lot of times when we've read this passage, I don't know about you, but I've kind of got the feeling, or thought anyway, that Elijah was in trouble. That Elijah had done wrong. And the Lord's kind of getting on to him. But I want us to stop a little bit and just think about something. The events leading up to this. So, about 3 years before this started, Elijah had went to King Ahab and said, "You know, you guys aren't living right, and there's going to be a drought on this land until the Lord tells me to say otherwise." And there was a drought for 3 years. And Elijah was hid from Ahab during that time. It said Ahab looked all over the country. Ahab traveled around and would try to, is Elijah here? And if the people of the land said no, he would take an oath from them. And finally, Elijah went down to Obadiah, the governor, and said, "You know, I'm ready to meet with Ahab. Tell him I'm here." The governor, of course, was like, "Well, now, I'm a righteous man, or you know, I believe in God. I've kept some prophets, 100 prophets, hid them in a cave, and I know that we've been looking for you for years. And if I leave to go tell Ahab that you're looking for him, you're going to be gone. You're going to go get hit again, and I'm not going to be able to find you. And then, you know, he's going to kill me because I will have told him a falsehood as far as he can tell." And Elijah was like, "No, I'm going to be here." And so Obadiah went and brought Ahab. Ahab said, "Oh, well, aren't you the man that's troubling Israel by causing this drought?" And Elijah was like, "No, you're the one that's troubling Israel by the practices you've got." And so then he challenged Ahab. He said, "Get the 450 prophets of Baal, and you and the Israelites come and meet me over here at Mount Carmel. And let's have a challenge. And let's see what's going to happen. We'll let you guys start. You guys get first start. You can start in the morning and you can kill your sacrifice and lay it out how you want to. And the only thing is, you can't light the fire. You have to pray to your God to light the fire." And we know how that went. They prayed and they started in the morning, and they prayed and they worshiped and they did what they had to do. And around noontime, the fire still hadn't fell. And by then, Elijah's starting to poke fun at him. "Go wake your God up. Maybe holler louder. Maybe he's gone on a little trip. You need to holler and get his attention. Maybe he's out hunting. Maybe, you know, just why is he not answering?" So the priests and the prophets of Baal started acting even crazier, started cutting themselves. And this went on till the evening. So they had been doing that all day, trying to get the fire to come down. And then Elijah says, "Okay, there's an altar to the Lord here. I want to rebuild it." So he took 12 stones, built an altar, put the wood on it, put the sacrifice on it, had him dig a trench around it. 3 barrels of water poured over that altar. And then he just simply said, "You know, Lord, show these people that I'm following your word, that what I'm doing is what you asked me to do, and show them that you're the God that has not turned his heart away from the Israelites, and that you're trying to turn the Israelites' heart back to you." And the fire fell. And not only did it fall, but it burnt up everything. The rocks, the sacrifice, the water in the ditch. And the Israelites, you know, the Lord is God, and they killed the prophets of Baal. And so then Elijah went and prayed for the rain to come, and we know how the rain came, and it was heavy rain, and he ran ahead of Ahab into the city of Jezreel. And they get in the city, and the king tells the queen, you know, it's been an impressive day. Elijah came, and he challenged the prophets, and they couldn't bring fire down, and fire came down from God and burnt up his sacrifice, and all your prophets are dead. And Jezebel sent a message to Elijah. Said, I'm going to kill you before the day's out, before tomorrow comes. You're going to be like my prophets. You're going to be dead. So I want to ask us a question. What had Elijah done wrong up to this point? What was the Lord going to chastise him for? Had he done anything wrong? But we do see what Elijah did next. He took off. He ran to Beersheba. And when he got to Beersheba, he did something else. He told his servant to stay there. And he took off into the wilderness. When he gets out into the wilderness, you know, he sits down and he says, Lord, you need to take my life. I've done everything I can do. These people, they're stubborn, wicked people. They're not doing anything. I've done everything I can do. It's time for me to die. And then he laid down and slept. He was feeling pretty dejected, wasn't he? Discouraged. Have you ever thought about sometimes that here he had just seen one of the most miraculous workings that we probably heard about, how God answered prayer in front of all these people, and it doesn't appear to have turned very many people's hearts? Oh, they were excited at the time, but not long enough for it to make a difference when they got back to the city, because the queen says, I'm going to have him killed then. I'm going to kill him. And Elijah's like, well, Lord, I've been working so hard. You know, I've hid out for 3 years already because of the drought. I came back, we did this, and now they're going to kill me anyway. I don't want to die at their hands. So I'm going to go out here in the wilderness. Lord, it's my time to go. I've done all I can do for you. Have you ever thought that Elijah was maybe discouraged and depressed and struggling to keep his focus? And one of the things he did was he ran away from stuff. He's like, okay, Lord, I'm going to get away. And then not only did he run away, but he started separating himself from the people that supported him, all the way down to his servant finally. You stay here. Do you know sometimes when we get discouraged, when we get depressed, when we're struggling with how things are going, we can find ourselves doing like Elijah. Lord, I don't know anymore. I am at my wit's end. I have nobody to turn to, or at least I feel like I don't. And what was the Lord's response? How did the Lord respond to Elijah's discouragement, to his depression, his feeling like he just had no other way to make an impact? Well, first, if we go there in chapter 19, drop back to verse 4, we're going to read 4 through 7. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree. And he requested for himself that he might die and said, it is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am not better than my fathers. And as he lay and slept under a juniper tree, behold, an angel touched him and said unto him, arise and eat. And he looked, and behold, there was a cake baking on the coals and a cruse of water at his head. And he did eat and drink and laid him down again. And the angel of the Lord came unto him the second time and touched him and said, arise and eat, because the journey is too great for thee. So one of the things that I find interesting here is, do you know it looks like the first thing the Lord did for Elijah was take care of his temporal needs, his earthly, worldly needs? Have you ever realized that sometimes if you're stressed, tired, and worn out, that'll impact your attitude and the ability of people to interact with you. You just don't feel good. Speaking for myself here, has anybody ever just felt grumpy and kind of felt a little better when you can be grumpy on somebody else? I hate to admit it, but sometimes that happens. We're in a grumpy mood and you can kind of share that grumpy mood, and unfortunately it doesn't fix your problem, but you feel slightly better momentarily. Then you feel bad for what you did. But here, God said, you know what? I'm going to get you something to eat. I'm going to get you rest. I'm going to make sure you're rested up, that you're physically rested, you're taken care of. And then what? Well, let's start there in verse 8. Keep reading. And he arose and did eat and drink and went in the strength of that meat 40 days and 40 nights unto Horeb, the mount of God. And he came thither into a cave and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said unto him, what dost thou hear, Elijah? And he said, I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword, and I, even I alone, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. So now we see here he went to Mount Horeb. Now what is Mount Horeb? That's actually Mount Sinai. Now I find this interesting. This is the same mount where Moses spoke to the Lord. It's the same mount where the law was given. The same mount where he started teaching and instructing people in the foundations of how to worship the Lord. So now we see not only did the Lord take care of the literal needs of Elijah, got him some rest to help his frame of mind, got him some food, some comfort, but then he took him in the strength of that, what I'm going to say, back to the foundations of why are you here? What are you doing here? What's your purpose? Why are you here? Was the question, what are you doing here, actually a rebuke? Or was it maybe more of a gentle reminder? Look, Elijah, you've gotten distracted. You're looking at things with the wrong set of eyes. You're looking at them through your literal eyes again. I need to get you reset. I need to get your eyes put back to where they need to be so you can see properly. Now, one thing I found interesting, do you realize that the Lord didn't just pick up Elijah and put him on the mountain? Now, we know he's tired, apparently. The Lord said, it's going to be a tough journey. I'm going to give you plenty of rest, plenty of food, but then you're going to have some journeying to do as part of this. Didn't just instantly transport him here. And then I've been struck by Elijah's response. Basically, I've been very jealous for you, Lord. All these people, they've forsaken you. They've torn down your altars. They've killed your prophets. I'm the only one left. And now they want to kill me. Elijah was being honest with the Lord. He said, Lord, this is where I see. You want to know what am I here for? I thought I was here to help turn the children of Israel's hearts to you. I thought I was here to preach. But I don't see any benefit of my actions, Lord. They want to kill me now. And then what? Who's left? And I like what the Lord did next. Because while they're there in the mountain, you'd think, okay, he's back to the birthplace of his spiritual foundations and all of that. But the Lord didn't say, well, you've made it back to the place where it all began. But the Lord did something special next. So we're going to start there in verse 11. And he, the Lord, said, go forth and stand upon the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind rent the mountains, and brake in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still small voice. And it was so when Elijah heard of it that he wrapped his face in the mantle and went out and stood in the entering end of the cave. And behold, there came a voice unto him and said, What doest thou here, Elijah? And he said, I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. And the Lord said unto him, Go, return on thy way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when thou comest, anoint Hazael to be king over Assyria. And Jehu, the son of Nimshi, shall thou anoint to be king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat of Abimelech, that shalt thou anoint to be prophet in thy room. And it shall come to pass that him that escapeth the sword of Hazael shall Jehu slay, and him that escapeth from the sword of Jehu shall Elisha slay. Yet have I left me 7,000 in Israel, all the knees which have not bowed unto Baal, and every mouth which hath not kissed him. One of the things I like is he didn't berate Elijah for Elijah's feelings. He didn't say, son, you just don't understand. You're just being weak and you need to toughen up. Instead, he showed Elijah his power. He sent a great fire, earthquake, mighty wind. I think these were to remind Elijah, this is the God I am. But to me, the most precious part is that still small voice. When somebody whispers, how close do they have to be to you? The word translated still means to whisper. God whispered to Elijah. God was not a God at this time that was far away, that said, Elijah, you know, I'm way up here in heaven and I can see your problems, but if you'll just, you know, just, no. God came down and said, Elijah, let me ask the question again, this time personally, what are you doing here? Why are you here? What's bothering you, child? How can I help you? He came down and really wanted to communicate with Elijah personally and closely. And he was close, because it says a still, soft voice, a soft whisper. I can whisper and you can hear me across the room. I can turn around and whisper even softer and you have to be just about 6 inches from my mouth to hear. The Lord was wanting Elijah to know, I am right here, Elijah. I am with you. You're not alone. No matter what you feel, no matter how terrible it looks out there, you are not alone. I am right here, as close as I can get to you right now. And you know, God still didn't berate Elijah. Elijah repeated his feelings. And I find it interesting, the Lord's response. Okay, I know you feel that way. But you know what? You still got work to do. You're going to have to go back there. You can't hide out here in the wilderness. You've got to go back. But let me tell you some of the things you still need to do for me when you go back. Hazael, you need to make him king over Syria. Jehu, you need to anoint him king over Israel. And Elisha, you need to anoint him because he's going to keep carrying the word forward for me. He's going to be your replacement. And then he did something else to Elijah, though. He didn't just give him a list of tasks, but he said, no, by the way, Elijah, there's 7,000 people that have not bowed their knees to Baal. You're not alone. Those people are back there and capable of helping you. It also said that, you know, the judgments of God that he had told Elijah was about, they weren't going to fall short. Because he also said, whoever escaped Hazael, Jehu would kill. And whoever escaped Jehu would fall to Elisha. He said, you know, I know you feel like there's no effect of what you've said out there, but everything you've said will come through. It's not for naught. You just have to remember who I am. I'm the big, powerful God that can come close. I'd like for us to look at Isaiah 59 and 1. Isaiah 59 and 1 says, "Behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened, that it cannot save, neither his ear heavy, that it cannot hear." Now, if you were to look at this entire chapter, you will see it's actually a rebuke of the people. But the rebuke starts off with a statement that no matter what you've done, you cannot shorten the capability of the Lord's arm to work. He can save no matter what. You cannot make him to where he can't hear. He may not hear you because of your actions, but he heard. He may not act because of the way you're living, but he knows. And if we can turn to him, you know, his arm is still strong today. And his ear still hears. And if our heart's right, when he hears, he will be moved on our behalf. He was for Elijah. Elijah was like, "Lord, I don't know what else to do. All I can think of is it must be my time to die. And this is my thoughts, you know, and I really don't want to die at their hands. So if you could just take me, Lord, it would be a blessing. I'm at my wit's end, Lord. This is all I can see left that's useful for me." And the Lord said, "Tell you what, let me encourage you. First of all, let me get you back physically where I can work with you. Let me get you fed, get you rested up. Then I'm going to take you and I'm going to bring you back to the place of your foundation, get you some reminders of where you came from, why we're here. And then I'm going to show you some of my power. And then I'm going to draw really close to you so you know that I'm here. We're going to have a little talk. And I'm going to encourage you and I'm going to send you on your way." Hebrews chapter 12, verses 11 through 13. "Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterwards it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore lift up the feeble hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed." One of the things that struck me was Elijah did something that you see in the world a lot when he first got discouraged. He started separating himself from the people he knew. For whatever reason, that was what he was doing. He may have thought it, well, if I separate from these people, they won't be harmed because the harm's coming my way. We don't know why if you want to call it the psychological reasoning behind it, but he did. But in doing so, he also, and I'm going to use a term here from nature, separated himself from the herd. We watch nature. And how many times in nature, if you see a predator that's trying to attack a group of animals, will it attack the entire herd? Or instead, does it look for the animal that's drifting away from the herd? The one that's got a little too much space between it and the herd, not necessarily intentionally, and then it'll try to cut that one out, keep it from getting back to the herd, because it's easier to attack a single entity than a whole bunch. I think looking here, the Lord sent an angel to Elijah when it was time for him to be fed. He said, "You know what, Elijah? It's not good for you to be by yourself." He didn't tell Elijah, "You need to get up and you need to cook some food and then you need to..." He sent somebody to help. He said, "Elijah, here's some help for you till I can get you back to the right space." I would challenge us. Are we looking around at our brothers and sisters and considering those that, what did the verse say there? The hands which hang down and the feeble knees. The people that whose feet may be stumbling. Do we try to encourage those? If you think about what the Lord did here with Elijah when he asked him, "What are you doing here?" It wasn't intended to be a rebuke. It was a question. "Elijah, what are you doing here? How can I help you? You're running." Did anywhere in the reading, did you hear the Lord correct Elijah, saying, "Elijah, you should not have done that"? Even when Elijah repeated the second time that he felt all alone and felt like he was the next one to die, the Lord never once said, "You shouldn't feel that way. You're wrong for feeling that way, Elijah. He said, okay, I hear you. Now, I need you to go back, though. And I need you to take care of these tasks. And oh, by the way, you're not alone. There's 7,000 people out there. You think you're the one left, but guess what? There's 7,000 people that have stayed true. They need a leader, Elijah. They need the encouragement that you provide them by the visible things you've been doing for me. They need your encouragement, and you need to look to them for encouragement. So, I would ask us a question. If the Lord were to ask you today, what are you doing here? What would be your response? Would it be Elijah's, which is, and I'm paraphrasing here, Lord, I'm trying to draw as close to you as I can, but I'm struggling and need help. Do you know that's really what Elijah said if you kind of break it down? When asked, "Why? What are you doing here?" It's like, Lord, I've done everything I can think of. I don't know what else to do. I need help. That question, what are you doing here, was not intended to be a rebuke. It was intended to be an offer of help. So I'd challenge us all today. Be still. I know that the Lord is God. Sometimes you do have to take a moment out of the busy hecticness and get still. Stop running and worrying in our minds. We need to stop running and worrying in our minds. The world likes to get things stirred up. If you don't believe it, just read the news. And then the last part is we need to turn ourselves to listen to the Lord. You know, He can give you a peace which passes all understanding. Here Elijah knew, this queen is out to kill me. But apparently after talking to the Lord, he felt confident enough to leave the cave, go right back to the place, anoint the people, get Elisha, and go back to public living. In spite of what would seem like a fearful way to live, always wondering, when is the king going to have her way? But I think Elijah had a little bit of encouragement because he's like, you know what? The God that put that fire and the earthquake and that mighty wind across that mountain, He got close and whispered to me. And He let me know it's going to be okay. That I don't need to worry. I'm in His hands. I would challenge all of us. What are you doing today? Y'all pray for me.